Blog Talk Radio.
Message from our sponsor, Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum on this evening, November the 3rd, 2018. And before we proceed, I want to remind everyone that at 2 o'clock in the morning, it will be time to set your clock. Remember the old cliche, spring forward, fall back. So it's fall, and so remember to set your clocks back 1 hour at 2 a.m. So just to remind you. But anyway, welcome again to Booker T. Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum. Your host and moderator is Marshall Washington Cabinet Sibui, and we are certainly happy to be able to invite you to share with us as we discuss one of the major issues of the day. And of course, there are lots of things we could talk about, but one of the big issues that I thought would be appropriate to talk about is the topic, quote, should the United States, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow the wave of Central American refugees, and most of these people are from Honduras, but also I think there's some from some of the other countries that are involved in that particular area that has a lot of poverty, a lot of violence, a lot of gang associated violence. You have Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And this group is considered, or is called, Central America's Northern Triangle, and they're all experiencing similar problems that are leading to high refugee rates. And we'll go a little bit into that detail about what's causing these refugee rates to be so high as we get further into the show. But I just wanted to welcome everyone who's tuned in to listen, who's called in via the telephone line. And for those of you who are listening via the internet, if you would like to participate in the discussion, we certainly welcome you to call in and participate. And the number to call in is 657-383-0671. Again, that's 657-383-0671. And you can call in, and if you want to just listen, you can, but if you call in, we'd certainly like for you to participate if you want to. For those of you who are listening via the internet, if you change your mind and decide you would rather not just listen, but you like to talk, feel free about calling in on that number so we can hear your opinion. So at this time, we'd like to welcome one of our regular panelists who's been with us now almost for the whole nearly 2 years that we've done this show, Mr. Pianki, and we want to welcome you. And how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's been a nice, really quiet, restful day. I got out early this morning and did some charity work that me and my wife do every first Saturday of the month, and then came home and just took it easy all day, watched a little football on TV. But it's been a great day. The weather here has been just so beautiful. And a little chilly, but that's okay. It's football season, so I guess that's okay. But anyway, you heard, and I'm sure you may have been familiar with it already, but you heard the topic. I'll just repeat it for others who are just joining us. Should the United States, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow the wave of Central American refugees to enter this country when they arrive at our southern border? And that's going to be happening really soon. I don't know how close they are at this moment, but they are on the way up here to try to get into the country. Anyway, let me just do this, Mr. Bianchi, for those of our other listeners that may not be very familiar with this situation. I want to give you some information about what's causing them to want to leave their countries, as I say, mainly Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And so we'll know a little bit more about what's motivating these people to take the great risk of traveling so many hundreds of miles, nearly 1,000 miles, to get up here. Okay, first of all, all three of these countries in this northern Triangle of Central America are experiencing similar problems, which are leading all three to their high refugee rates. Okay, for example, Honduras is struggling with an incredibly high homicide rate. Honduras is currently tied with El Salvador for the highest homicide rate in the world. And in 2015, over 17,000 homicides, I just might as well say murders, but I'll say homicides, were recorded across the Northern Triangle, including Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And many of these killings are related to gang or criminal organization activity. In Honduras, the citizens run the risk of being extorted by these groups and are often threatened with violence if they are unable to pay whatever the shakedown fees happen to be that these gangs are imposing on them. They're often threatened with violence, even death. And also, Honduras is dangerous for women. In fact, the UN, pardon me, United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees reported that women fleeing the Northern Triangle, again, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, often report being assaulted, extorted, and threatened. Honduras averages 10.9 female homicides per 100,000 people. In comparison, the same statistic for the United States is only, and I don't mean to minimize it, but it's only 1.9 homicides per 100,000 people compared with Honduras, which is much smaller than the United States, of 10.9, almost 11 female homicides per 100,000 people. And the number of Honduran refugees trying to get away from there is growing. Nearly 10% of the region's 30 million citizens have fled in the past 10 years. And analysis from the Council on Foreign Relations said that the amount of people from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala living in the United States increased from 1.5 million to 2.7 million. Between 2000 and 2013. And of course, in addition to the threat of violence, Honduran refugees may also be fleeing from their countries for climate-related reasons. Honduras has been experiencing prolonged drought, El Nino weather phenomenon. This is over a year ago, so that El Nino weather phenomenon may not be going on right now, but they're still suffering from food shortages. The drought is having a severe effect on food prices and on farming in the country. Farming. Bean and maize. Maize is a word for a certain kind of corn. Bean and maize harvests, which are some of the primary staples of people in Central America, have been cut in half due to the drought leading to an increase in food prices. Consequently, malnutrition is a serious risk for families. The United Nations World Food Project reports that around a quarter of the children aged 6 months to 2.5 years struggle to survive due to chronic malnutrition. And the U.S. has, and this is back a couple of years ago, so these figures may not still be extant because there may have been cutbacks, but in 2015, when the Obama administration was trying to help these people, they appropriated $750 million to address the root causes of the influx of refugees. And time, the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program was established to aid refugees from the Northern Triangle. Obviously, there had been some change of policy concerning that now. The program, when it was established, was seeking to identify families in need and then to relocate them as permanent residents in the United States. So that's just a little background on some of the causes. Maybe that's not all, but some of the causes why these people are trying to come to America. One reason, because during the Obama administration, we were encouraging many of these people who had a bona fide need, whether it was because of the threat of violence, as we mentioned, or because of food shortages or whatever, we were encouraging these people to come to America. And now, obviously, that attitude is not present now. So you've heard a little bit of background. So for the benefit of someone who just joined us, we want to welcome you. And let me repeat the topic, and then I'm going to ask you for your opinion, Mr. Piyaki, but let me repeat the topic. Should the United States, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow the wave of Central American refugees from the Iron Triangle? I didn't put that in the marquee, but from Central America, from the part called the Iron Triangle, which is Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Should we, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow them to enter this country when they arrive at our southern border, and they're pretty close to arriving? And if yes, why? I want to let you explain why, if you want to say yes. If you want to say no, why not? So, Mr. Piyaki, let me turn it over to you. What do you think?
No.
And, of course, if no, why not?
Mr. Washington, have you ever heard of Alternity? I wish I had your email. I will send you the links of about a dozen or more YouTube videos of those three countries and how people in them are celebrating, how the kids are going to the mall on Christmas, how they're playing in water parks, how they participate in high school activities like marching bands and plays, how people are sitting out on the streets and sidewalk cafes, and how you have tourists that are commenting on how great the place is. It's also showing the markets where it don't look like they're shortage of food to me. And if that's the case, why is the people in these countries that, as I have described, participating, why aren't they looking out for their fellow kind? Another point, as I said before, because you're experiencing poverty, is that a reason to seek refuge in another country? United States gave, in 2016, gave Guatemala $267 million. El Salvador, $75 million. Honduras, $128 million. Just in that one year, not including the previous years, in aid. Those countries are a member of the Organization of American States, which includes a total of 35 countries, including the United States. I think Britain may be a part of them, too. So without the Western countries, U.S. and Britain, can't they solve their problems? Cape Verde solved its problems it had with drug cartels, and you didn't see people fleeing the place. And a couple of times when they had earthquake catastrophes, and I believe it was Guatemala, not sure, it might have been Honduras, the U.S. let some of those people come to the U.S. as a humanitarian gesture. But they got to go back home. Another point. The way the rule is that you go to the neighboring country and you go to their border and seek entry into those countries. You got Panama. You got Costa Rica. You got those three countries themselves. Of course, Mexico. But you don't even have to go to Mexico. Just go to Panama. There's a U.S. military base there in Panama. And they could have filled out the paperwork to come here and done it legally. Why do you need to come to the U.S. border? Another point, and it's just recent excursion that we're talking. Didn't the Mexican president offer them IDs and jobs that they turned down upon putting up a resistance of them crossing into Mexico out of Guatemala, they resorted to a little violence and fighting the police and so on. So, no, I don't think that those people should be able to walk into the United States, and I think that Americans should protect their borders. And by the way, for those that's concerned, U.S. Customs and Border Patrol have job offerings on their website that's paying anywhere from $60,000 to $90,000 plus a year. Military grade. What is it? G-12? You know more about that than I do, Mr. Washington. The Americans that's looking for something to do, that want to add on to their income, young people that want to take on a serious occupation. I would say that you might want to look into this, because it's there. It has benefits. You have a retirement. Protect American border. And I appreciate what Donald Trump is doing thus far and hope he sticks to it. If not, then I guess the militia is going to have to take over. A G-12 makes $97,486 per year. I don't know what it takes to get that, but a G-5, they're $52,583. Started as a BPA in December 2017. This is a little old, and you start off at $53,000. This year, if you was promoted in December, it's $62,949. And every December that you're promoted, you go to 70,000.7, 83,000, up to your $97,000 by 2021. That's 4 years from now. That's pretty good, I would think. What do you say, Mr. Washington?
Well, before I weigh in, because, you know, I usually give out information to start the conversation and then let the participants run with it, and then I may interject an opinion here and there, but I like to have everybody else have a chance to speak before I do it. So we have another caller who's been waiting for just a couple of minutes, and I want to make sure they have a chance to weigh in. So we would like to invite our caller from the 518 area code. Your last three digits of your number, 043, and you don't have to identify yourself if you don't want to. You have the opportunity, if you would like to, though, to let us know a little bit about yourself, where you're from, who you are, but you don't have to. We would like to hear your opinion. So would you like to tell us, what do you think about this question and also what Mr. Bianca just said? First of all, the question, should the United States, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow the wave of Central American refugees to enter this country when they arrive at our southern border? If yes, why? And if no, why not? And if you didn't hear the background and you'd like to get some information concerning the background while they're coming here, I'll give it to you. But if you've already heard it, I won't take up the time to repeat it. You heard, I saw that you won while Ms. Piaki was talking. So you heard his response. So what do you think about it? Okay. Sometimes people call in just to listen. They may not want to say anything until later in the program, or may not want to speak at all. But when I see somebody's come up, I always want to invite them to participate, to speak. So our caller from the 518 area code, what do you think about the question that we asked? Are you there? If you'd rather just not say anything at all, then, of course, I won't keep asking you. But if you just want to come on and say you'd rather just listen, please let me know that, and then I won't call on you again. Okay. And then sometimes we have people to dial in, and then they have to attend to something else. And then they may come back to the phone and catch up with us after a while. So let me go ahead. You know, that was the only other person that was on right now, so I will address your question to me, Mr. Pierre. Actually, you know, first of all, let me mention this. You know, I posted on my Facebook page earlier today because I usually advertise the program on Facebook and let my Facebook friends, those that get the notification on Facebook about different things that I want to let them know about. I posted on there this topic, but I also posted something else on there, and I'll share it with you to ask your question. I asked the question, are we still, meaning the United States of America, are we still the land of the free and the home of the brave? Does this quotation still apply? And this is on the base of the Statue of Liberty. Quote, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. And then on my Facebook page, I have this picture of these Honduran. Many of these are younger people. And this one picture I have on my Facebook page looks like a little family. The father's holding a little, looks like might be a two-year-old little girl in his arms. And the wife is next to him. And it seems like she's holding the hand of another child. And it really touched me. I've been putting a lot of time into watching the progress of this group of people. I was surprised that Mexico allowed them free transit through Mexico, because I would be thinking that there would be a lot of social services that would be required along the way that the Mexicans would have to provide. I don't know what they're doing, but the people obviously had to be given food along the way. There should have probably been some arrangement for some kind of emergency medical care to be provided, and even things like sanitary logistical issues. Somebody had to do that, and I was surprised that Mexico even went to that extent. But again, it touched me to see these people, and especially after I read what I read about the conditions. I will give out my email address, Mr. Pianchi, because I would invite you to send me those video links. My email address is M as in Marshall, A as in Apple, B as in Boy, U as in Uncle, W as in Willie, I as in India, MABUWI at gmail.com, MABUWI at gmail.com. So I'd appreciate it if you would send those links to me. But
I will.
My opinion. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, I'm just, you know, trying to be knowledgeable.
And I want to add something in about the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty was a gift to the United States, built by the person that built the Eiffel Tower. I think it was Gustavo Eiffel. And what was written on there, the United States had nothing to do with it. That's what those people that gave that to the U.S. as a gift, they put that on there. So it's just what it is, a gift with a slogan on it. It has no bearing in U.S. law, has no bearing in the United States Constitution. It's about like the preamble that comes before the Constitution. It's not within the context of the U.S. Constitution. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, I'm certainly not going to argue that point, but I will say this. I'm an idealistic person, always have been. Wanted to be a Catholic priest when I was a boy. Later on, I changed my religion and changed my mind about that, because I learned when I was in the seminary, this was the junior seminary where the teenagers go before they go to the real seminary to actually get ready to be ordained. And the preacher was in charge, told me, he says, you know, you won't never be able to get married. And a 15-year-old boy to tell some kid like myself, I could never have a girlfriend, I could never get married. That was the end of the road for me as far as that religion, at least that vocation was concerned. But the thing about it was that I've always been idealistic and always felt sorry. I don't like to use the word feel sorry, but I've always felt compassionate and sympathy for people that were less fortunate. I grew up not in a rich family or even a fluent family, but But we had food on the table for every meal, and my dad was able to buy at least one new car when I was growing up, and we had new clothes most of the year. We would wear the same old clothes, but around Easter, my mother would buy us at least a new suit or a new set of clothes. So I was not really well off, but I never really suffered like a lot of kids that I knew of. And so I always was encouraged by the teachers in my school, the nuns at the Catholic school, to have compassion for less fortunate people. So when I heard about this, you get to the question that you had asked me before, and I saw on TV some pictures of these people, video, my heart went out to these people. And I didn't know a lot about these conditions in their country. And certainly the information that you're going to send me will be revealing. But my heart goes out to any people that are suffering from any kind of repression, extortion, murders, and stuff like that. And I do believe, going back to what you said about that, that statement, that's called the New Colossus, and it was actually written by Emma Lazarus. Now, the people that actually donated the Statue of Liberty may have gotten it from her and put it on there, but it sounds like that. Emma Lazarus sounds like somebody that, I don't know if she was American or if she was European, but at least to me, as a child going to grade school, it identified the character of America. I didn't know a lot about American history at that time, not to give you a lecture. I don't want to do that. Now, I didn't know about the genocide of the Indians. I didn't know about how the settlers, the Spanish and others, infected blankets with smallpox germs and gave them to the Indians to be able to kill the Indians. I didn't know how they wiped out, you know, hundreds and thousands, maybe millions of buffalo that the Indians needed to live on in order to chase the Indians off the land. I didn't know about a lot of this history, which I teach. And I don't make it up. I find, you know, documented evidence of this. Okay. I didn't know anything about some of these tragic things. I didn't even know about people being lynched. As a 9 or 10 year old child, I didn't know anything. But it wasn't until I was around 12 years old and I saw that horrific picture of Emmett Till, you know, disfigured, that I even realized that people had that kind of spirit to do things like that to other people. But when I was in grade school and they told me, the nuns told me about this particular saying that was on the Statue of Liberty and how it opened up hope for a lot of these immigrants coming from countries where they weren't getting enough food or they weren't able to be safe. I said, that's great. That made me really want to later on in my life defend America because of what America represented. Now, what you're telling me is that's not, well, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Mr. Pianchi, but you're seemingly telling me that America's not really about all that. And that's kind of disappointing if what you say is true.
The United States of America is one of the most charitable countries in the world. But see, but here's the thing. My charity started home. You got how many black males are in prison? In California alone, 75% of the black males can't read at level. I told you last week, I believe, if I talked to you, that in one school district that I was school building, that I was talking to the principal about another program, she let me know that only 10% of the third graders can read. And all the perks that these illegals and immigrants get, whereas they are entitled, and I don't know why, to enter your public schools. Well, I hear people saying about their schools don't have enough money as it is. Let me give you an example. Let's say you represent the poor. And let's talk about black people. If you represent black people in the United States, and of course, black people in the United States, the poorest of the poor, is going to have the higher income, or should I say, have more money at their disposal than people in other countries. I mean, black poor in the United States is probably middle class to some in other countries. But let's say that you rank blacks at a 30, and these people that you just described, let's rank them at a 10. Well, if you combine 30 and 10 and 30 and 10 together, that gives you 40. Divided by 2, that's 20. Blacks have came down by 10, and they will elevate themselves by 10. I find that totally unacceptable. And that's what happens. You got programs in school, public schools, to teach whole buildings, to teach these foreigners how to speak English. But you got African-American kids that have problems with their English, and to the point where it has been labeled Ebonics, they don't have that same type of treatment. And in any campaign to try to get public sentiment, what do? Those that are trying, they put these kids out there in the front of the camera. They don't look like their clothes are worn and tattered. The women don't look like their breast is flat on their chest. The men don't look like they're missed any meal either. A whole far cry than what you see going on with the Palestinian. A whole far cry than what you see that's going on in Darfur in the Sudan. So when you're on the plane and the steward is there giving you instructions on putting on your seatbelt and giving you instructions on how to act, how to perform, if in time that the cabin is depressurized and those masks pop down for you to be able to breathe oxygen, the instructions is to make sure that yours is in order before you start helping the person next to you. Good logical sense. United States is not in no position to be taking in people at every drop of the hat. And look at all the things that people want. And I think that I've made mention of that before. And everyone wants something. I mean, think about it. Everyone that you have an opportunity to listen to their complaints, they're wanting something. And, you know, I can't even begin to name it. You got people wanting free education. You got people wanting a clean water in Flint. You got people wanting reparations. You got people wanting free and reduced lunch. You got people wanting new highways. You got people wanting universal government health care. You want due process for illegals. They have access to your courts. You want universal income, subsidized housing, earned income tax credit, which they have access to, even though they don't even make the money. Free schools, free college, student loan forgiveness. As I mentioned earlier, reparation for slavery. Yet more food assistance, free and reduced lunch programs, public transportation, higher minimum wage. I went yesterday, Mr. Washington, bought 6 donuts from Krispy Kreme. $8.75 if you get 2 bites out of them. Mercy aid to other countries. Help for foreign kids at the border. That's $800 a day, I understand. That's being spent on those foreign kids at the border that's supposed to have been separated from their parents, but they came to the border with an adult. When you do an DNA, they're not even related. More unpaid volunteers, free education for illegals and refugees, more holidays off, yet another Marshall Plan for somebody. As I said earlier, fix Flint water, and on and on. Who is going to pay for all this? If you're on Social Security, you're receiving Social Security, you received a raise. Are you ready to give that back right away? Because they constantly trying to take it. The days, you know who they are. With some yet another scheme. So now, let those countries take care of their own people. Let's go over to a Sudanese refugee camp and get a boatload of them and bring them over. Those black refugees. Let's head over and get a boatload of them. They're in a lot less worse condition than those that we've seen on the picture. They got clean drinking water. They must have so much food that when Mexico offered them ID and work, many of them turned it down. No, Donald Trump is doing the right thing. If he can't do the right thing, then I think that American citizens, some of them good old boys out of Mississippi and Alabama, those militia, should protect the borders. You don't know what's in there. If you want to come into this country, which I think is a good thing if you do, come in the right way. If you're here because of humanitarian purposes for a given amount of time, when that time is up, then you got to go. France does it. Germany does it. Britain does it. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say right now.
Okay. All right. We appreciate your opinions. We appreciate everybody's opinion. And I do want to invite Stephanie. I just saw Stephanie just joined us, my sister-in-law, to participate. And I just want to, in case you haven't seen it, to reiterate the topic. But first of all, welcome tonight, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Yeah, have you seen the topic? Do you want me to repeat the topic?
Yes, if you could. Thank you.
Okay, here's the topic. Should the United States, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, that's the caveat, with careful controls to eliminate entry by criminals, allow the wave of Central American refugees to enter this country when they arrive at our southern border? If yes, why? If no, why not? Now, if you need a little background on what's causing these people to make the trek up here to try to come into America, I'll give you that, but I've already presented it, and so I'm not going to take up your time and other listeners' time repeating it unless you ask me to tell you what the background is. But if you don't need the background, then I won't give it. But you've heard the topic question, so what do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, as human beings, we all need to think about how we came over, or our people came over into this country. We want something for ourselves, but not for the next person. And when it gets like cutthroat like that, that's just inhuman. Just dog eat dog. There's enough room for everybody on the planet. And as you travel across the United States, especially if you've ever traveled by car, you will see so much acreage and acreage and miles of unused land here in the United States. I don't think it'll really hurt anything for some of these desperate people to be set up in a place like that. I'd rather see my money going towards something like that than into these politicians' hands. What are they doing with it? Buying gold toilet stools and stuff? You know, it's real sinful. And as far as these people being criminals, no, we know where the real criminals are and who the real criminals are. You know, you keep seeing it in the news, Donald Trump talking about the Muslims are the terrorists in this country. No, they're not. The KKK is, his good old boys. They have been terrorists on black people in this country for a good 500 years. But there's some real, you know, desperate people. And that's causing for desperate measures. I know we just can't flood our country with a whole bunch of foreigners, but I think there's some room to do something. I guess United States don't have that kind of heart, never have. You know, I get tired of, I almost hung up the phone because I just get tired of hearing African Americans being put down all the time. It's hatred. A person must hate the skin that they're in.
Well, Stephanie, can I ask you one thing? Could you focus on the question about the refugees?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Because I really would like for us to invite some more conversation. We only have 10 minutes left on the show. And I'm very concerned that the people that are listening hear your justification for letting the refugees come in.
Yeah, they ain't no. I feel safer around them than I do these terrorists that we already have here in this country. I'll say that. So if you want to get rid of some terrorists, they already in here. And I don't want a wall built all the way around the United States putting us in a prison with those terrorists. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, well, we appreciate it. Well, we only have 9 minutes left, and I know that there are those who are listening via the Internet that for whatever reason just want to remain as listeners and don't want to speak. And, of course, you know, we're going to give everybody a chance to make final comments or a final wrap-up comment before we close. And even though I told you a few minutes ago, Ms. Pianca, that I normally don't editorialize, I just like to give the background for the topic and maybe might give an opinion, but I like to hear other people give their opinions. I love to hear other people give their opinions, and even though I may have a different opinion, that's fine. But I will say this, and it's kind of like, so Stephanie just came on. I'm saying it for the benefit of most of others who just came on, but it's kind of like reiterating what I said earlier. You know, as a child, when the school teachers told me to care about less fortunate people, and there were a lot of less fortunate people in the area near where I lived. The little community where I lived was rather like an island in the middle of a lot of black poverty. Tuskegee Institute was considered to be an oasis, but all around in that black belt area of Alabama was a lot of poverty. I mean, I saw many, many days where black people in gangs were out in the cotton fields. And I saw many, many shotgun shacks, slave shacks, I call them, unpainted. Some of them looked like they hadn't had any repairs done in their whole 100 years or 80 years or however many years they've been standing. I even been up into some of them where, for whatever reason, the owner wouldn't spend the money to get a plank put there on the steps so people wouldn't fall through the hole on the steps. Some people might have said, and even Booker T. Washington said, well, if the people are living in the house, maybe they should try to find out where they can buy some wood and fix the steps. But when you have people that weren't even making enough money to buy new pairs of shoes for their children every year because they were on the old sharecropper system of getting paid, where they were constantly in debt to the plantation owner, and didn't really even, some of the plantations didn't even give money to those people. They gave them what they call scrip. And this is back in the 50s. They were still using that back there on some of those farms where you had to take that scrip either to the plantation owner's store or one of his friend's store and trade it in for your food. So they didn't have any extra cash to be buying wood to fix up the house. And I don't say that's an excuse, because Booker T. Washington said, you know, that some of the people were wasting the little money they did have on frivolous things. But my point is that I learned to become compassionate towards those people that were suffering. And so when they taught me in school, and I'll wrap up on this note, that America's character, America's real spirit, in spite of what I later found out was contradictory to this about how America committed genocide on the Indians and enslaved the black people and so forth. But they told me, these white nuns told me, that America's spirit was what's reflected in that quotation. Stephanie, I read to you, I'd already read it before, where this Statue of Liberty, the base of the Statue of Liberty, it has this statement on there about send me your huddled masses, send me your poor people, and so forth. And I believed in that. I believed in that. You know, and I still want to believe in that. You know, it says, the quotation says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. And I've always felt that America, having traveled all around the world, I mean, the only continents I haven't been to is Australia and Antarctica. There's seven continents, I believe it's seven. I've been under other five. And I have seen how great America is in comparison to these other places. Mm-hmm. You know, even though Japan is very, very highly industrialized, and Korea wasn't industrialized when I left over there in 64, but Japan was, even 10 years after World, 20 years after World War II, you would have never known. And the cities that I visited, like Tokyo and other cities, Yokohama, Tokyo, that there had ever been a war over there. That's how quick those people rebuilt. But even saying that, I was glad to get home to America, because America, to me, has always represented the highest ideal that people can achieve if we just look at the good side. Now I feel bad because I'm beginning to feel like America doesn't want to stand up for those values anymore. And that's the thing that bothers me. And maybe it might bother some of you. Go ahead, Mr.
Bianco.
We're going to wrap up.
You know, Mr. Washington, you talk about what the Americans done to Native, to quote-unquote Native American. Have you ever been privy to the type of genocide that Native played on other Natives? Have you ever been privy to that information? The Aztecs, the Mayans, and the Taino. The Taino, of course, is the Puerto Rican descendants, were ancestors of the Puerto Ricans and of those parts there. But look at the Aztecs. Aztecs assembled a 250,000 man army. They say that Columbus committed genocide. By Aztecs' own records, they would kill, in 4 days, over 80,000 people on top of that step pyramid that's down in South America and throw them off the side. They would take their beaten hearts out. The Mayans wage war against their neighbors. I mean, maybe we're talking about human nature. You talk about the natives in this country, in the northeast corner, they collaborated. One tribe collaborated with the settlers to get guns to use on their neighbors. And then you had another tribe that collaborated with the British when the American Revolution was going on, that George Washington so cleverly led us through with the help of France and the help of Haiti. So when the United States, or when this country defeated Britain, what do you think happened to those that was fighting along with Britain against this country's troops? They had something to pay. And it's still that way. You shoot at American troops, you know, you say you was in there, they are taught to shoot back. Obama said the same thing. So if somebody's got enough audacity to pick the wrong side, I'm sorry. Texas seceded from Mexico. Said we didn't want to have nothing else to do with you. Panama seceded from Colombia. That's why we have the Panama Canal today. Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant Confederate general, U.S. general, should I say, a Yankee general or a Union troop general, they fought along with another notable general with the U.S. American troops. They fought against Mexico and defeated her. You wage war against a country where you're supposed to be able to do what you think you're going to do. If not, I don't know what to say. Look how they slaughtered the people at the Alamo. Look at all the American kids that's in orphanages, orphan homes. Black kids never find a home. I can't understand it. Here you want to take somebody's kid from 1,200 miles away and probably within blocks in your own city you have a orphanage where you have black kids that never find a home. I'll see you next week.
Okay, we're going to wrap up. So thank you, Mr. Pianca. We appreciate you. And Stephanie, would you like to make a closing comment? Mr. Pianca just dropped off, so if you want to address something to him, he's already gone. It's really just me
and
you.
That's okay. I know
right
now.
Well, he's gone, so
you know,
we don't have to talk about him. He's gone.
We house a lot of animals. We have a lot of kennels where we house dogs and cats. We house wild animals. Now we're talking human beings. Humans. I still say there's enough room for everyone. We could set up some places, unused places here in the United States, just like they set up those reservations. And that's all.
Okay, well, we thank you, Stephanie. Is that it? Did you want to go on, or is that it?
That's it. Thank you for having
me. Okay, well, we thank you, too. We always love to have you on the show. You always say some very powerful statements, and I certainly appreciate you, not just because you're my sister-in-law, but because you're such an articulate spokesperson for your beliefs. So thank you again for being on tonight, and for all of those who've been listening, this has been a very provocative topic. We may talk about it again next week when we have more participation, because it'll still be going on. But in the meantime, good night to everyone. Don't forget to set your clocks back at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's in the morning coming up. We're going to be going back off for daylight saving time or going on it. I can't remember which one it is, but I just know we have to set our clocks back an hour. So God bless everyone. Have a good week coming up. And for those of you that are experiencing a little chilly weather, for some it may be pleasant, for others it may not, but for me personally, I like it like this, but I don't want to get too much colder. So thank you, and God bless.
God bless you, too.